Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Yes, indeed, it's The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. And a very special guest today out of Stamford, Connecticut. It's Dr. Leo Kiviarv. I got that right. I'm so happy on the first try. Dr. Leo Kiviarv is Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media. We'll tell you more about PQ Media and what they're up to, and we'll find out more as we bring him on for a few segments here. A lot of good stuff coming your way today as well. We've got just momentarily Patrick Meyer, our marketing insider with SWAT teams. He's going to be talking about that, or he at least has him with him, I'm not sure. And Gene Bliss a little bit later on this hour, based on the customer experience, based on the word tilt, as in T-I-L-T. So we'll find out what that's all about. Anyway, it's good to have you here at the Advertising Show. Let's see. We have something a little bit different going on here with MySpace, okay? It's not MySpace. It's MySpace for Latinos. Did you hear about that, Brad?
Wouldn't that be MeSpace?
MeSpace. Bienvenidos Latinos, it says here. Out of the beta site, unveiled 8 new communities focused on entertainment, fashion, celebrity, music, nightlife, soccer, events, and news. That's a good start. MeSpace Latino is out of beta. It's officially launched a bilingual community to serve more than 9.7 million Hispanic members. The world's most popular social networking site unveiled 8 new communities focused on, as we said, the entertainment and all those great things that go along with that. It was actually launched in beta last year, so what they're doing is doing some really cool stuff there. And you know, as we all well know, where is communication going, and how are people talking to people and other people and getting the word out? And it's obviously MySpace is one of those places. So it's interesting that it's taken this long to do something for the 9.7 million Hispanics. But way to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, trying to figure out where media is going, the Seattle Times, battered by its continuing decline, Ray, and ad revenues, will cut nearly 200 staffers, they just announced, which is more than half of them, through a layoff situation. It's also closing 2 suburban bureaus and ceased zone editions in 2 neighboring counties, and is also planning to save about $15 million in the effort. A spokesman for the paper, Ray, said there will be some changes that will affect both readers and advertisers. Yeah, I would guess.
In an email to
employees, the newspaper said that the reductions will include up to 131 layoffs and 60 unfilled positions will remain that way. So, you know, traditional media companies, some are figuring it out, others are scrambling and rearranging the furniture on the Titanic. A sad situation when you see any major newspaper such as the Seattle Times struggling. But, you know, I think all in all, traditional media will figure it out. And, you know, maybe they need to cut some of that fat and figure out how to survive in this digital world we live in today.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that they bring in people to replace those, obviously, in lesser numbers, those who understand that, okay, this is broke. It's not going to work the way you all thought it's going to work, and you do have to make some changes here to survive in the future. So,
yeah,
I think it's rather important. Hey, by the way, Alex Ben Block, this month, actually on the 26th, has something cooking at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. They'll launch a one-year exhibit of the cover work that he created for George Lois. That's right. A one-year
George
exhibit
Lois.
Of the cover work that he created for Esquire magazine. I had a name here and a different name as well. But that's on the 26th. That's going to be cool. If you're in the city around that time, Museum of Modern Art, New York City, the cover work for Esquire magazine from George. So it's kind of a cool deal for him. And imagine that. Imagine what you do making it to the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. I mean, yeah. How many awards is that worth? You know,
I think it's a first, as George said. And by the way, if you want to know who George Lois is, Google him or go back to any of our archive programs at theadvertisingshow.com. Exactly. The guy's a legend, an ad icon. But as he mentioned when he was on the show, Ray, first ever time that you'll find the Museum of Modern Art in New York featuring a commercial artist. So that's a first for them, and a great salute to George, and well deserved.
Yeah, no kidding. Well deserved is an understatement. Patrick Meyer, also out of New York City, the Marketing Insider, is with us now. He's talking today about SWAT teams. Let's find out what that's all about.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider, featuring Patrick Meyer.
Today I'm going to talk to you about marketing and advertising SWAT teams. I'm not talking military here or police. I was with one CMO recently, and he goes, Patrick, what I love about what you folks are doing it now is that you come in quick with seasoned people who can get it done. That's about SWAT teams. Ever see the classic movie, The Magnificent Seven? Done with Steve McQueen, Yul Brynner, amazing cast, inspiring movie. Well, that's what I'm talking about here, creating Magnificent Seven teams. When you've got a challenge or you've got an opportunity, instead of creating a 30-person group coming together in a think tank or giving it off to the agency to work on for 8 weeks, think differently. The speed is of the essence. Create a SWAT team of more than 10 people. Give them a challenge, set them up, give them the resources, but give them the latitude to go for it. We're taking this approach for an emerging tequila brand, and in 6 weeks, we're going to create an episodic marketing plan that will probably rock the category, coming at it differently in terms of driving word of mouth, different media approaches, different advertising approaches, and driving volume. If you're inside an agency, you should also think this way. When the client says we need different creative teams, don't think just a creative team. Think SWAT teams. How can you put together a 3, 4, or 5-person SWAT team that build ideas that are integrated ideas, not just advertising ideas? SWAT teams, fast, decisive, impact, very efficient, and get it done.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer as your Marketing Insider. And remember, the revolution is now. Hey, you want to know more? Go to nowinc.net or send me an email at patrick@nowinc.net.
Thank you very much, Patrick Meyer, on The Advertising Show with Ray Schulins and Brad Forsyth. Dr. Leo Kiviarv is our special guest vice president and director of research at PQ Media. PQ Media, by the way, is the website. I know you've got something special you want to highlight as well, Brad, but let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Kiviarv. He joined PQ in 2003 with 3 decades of experience in media, management, research, consulting, and academia. He serves as the research director of PQ Media's customs projects and publications. He is a respected source of information for more than 200 news and trade sources, including Nightly Business Report, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Advertising Age, and a whole bunch more here. So we're going to find out a little bit more about PQ Media and what Dr. Kiviarv has to say as well. So tell me something. I saw this in the office a little bit earlier today. What do you have there?
Yeah, well, in the next few weeks, we're going to be formally announcing the fact that the Advertising Show and a company called OpenAd, a company that we have featured here on the show through a guest of that organization, will be forging a partnership, if you will. It's a company that's based out of Europe. Just Google OpenAd, you'll find what they do. But it's a great company, and hold on a second, Ray. I've got that right here. It is I can't find it, so never mind. Anyway, it's a great company, and we're going to be talking about the partnership and more about that in the next few weeks. It's going to be a great relationship, and that's called a tease, I guess, huh, Ray?
That was a grand tease, actually, which is fine. That's wonderful. Marketers finding a sound that draws a crowd. What might that sound be? In cartoons, the Roadrunner goes beep beep or meep meep. On Madison Avenue, the popular onomatopoeia is pronounced bleep bleep. Apparently, folks are finding that when you bleep bleep things, you're grabbing attention. And that's shown in a Bud Light, the swear jar commercial. I don't know whether you've seen that. I know a lot of people have. But basically, the 4, 7, and 12-letter words fly freely, accompanied by bleep, bleep. This is something out of the cartoon. times. It's like, okay, get somebody's attention. It's the Advertising Show. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth, Dr. Leo Kiviarv out of Stamford, Connecticut is our guest today's show, and we'll be back with him in just a minute.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Nobody can call George Whipple an old fuddy-duddy. This new sign is right up with the times. Maybe this will stop the ladies from squeezing.
And welcome back. As promised, Dr. Leo Kiviarv out of Stamford, Connecticut, Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media. Dr. Kiviarv, it is so good to have you here on The Advertising Show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and if you tuned in expecting to hear Patrick Quinn, the CEO of PQ Media, Dr. Leo was so kind to step in due to an illness that Patrick experienced just prior to the show today. Leo, if you would, share with us a little bit about what you do at PQ Media. I know a lot of it has to do with custom media research, and certainly that's the name of your game, but expand on that, if you would, for our audience who may not be familiar with PQ Media.
Well, PQ Media is the leading provider of alternative media econometrics, and we also partner with Verona Sewler Stevenson, an equity management firm, on their annual Verona Sewler Stevenson Communication Industry Forecast that's been published since 1987, and it's the industry standard for media spending usage and forecast research. And in the aggregate with our alternative media econometrics and the Verona Sewler Stevenson report, we have a proven research methodology that maps, tracks, analyzes forecast spending and usage trends in all 19 major media segments and more than 100 subsegments of the media industry. For example, if we were to take a look at broadcast television, we also know the subsegments of national spot, local spot, syndication, etc. So what we do is we provide industry stakeholders with actionable strategic intelligence to make their high-stake investment decisions, and we have our own custom and syndicated data in our alternative research series. We've published reports such as the Digital Out-of-Home Forecast, Word of Mouth Marketing Forecast, and this year we published the Branded Entertainment Forecast and the Alternative Media Forecast that looks at 19 different alternative media strategies such as online, video game advertising, product placement, event marketing, etc.
Yeah, we're going to touch on a couple of those releases, that, or studies, I should say, and I say releases because we regularly here at the Advertising Show receive press releases on PQ Media and what you guys do, and a very well-established and honorable company that researches in the sectors as you just described. Let's talk a little bit about some of your recent research that you published. Your firm suggests more and more marketers are shifting their budgets from traditional to alternative media. What are the reasons for this shift, do you feel, Leo?
Well, it's really a confluence of factors more than anything else. We're seeing a definite fragmentation of media. So if you're a media buyer, and this were 1975, all you needed were some rating data or circulation data, and you had about eight choices whether or not you wanted to put it into newspaper, TV, or radio. But what's happened now is that if you're a media buyer, and imagine that somebody who had hair back in 1975 would probably be bald today because of all of the choices they have to do. And it's over 60 choices that a media buyer has to deal with, including a number of the new ones that have only been in existence since the late 1990s and into the early 2000s. And a classic example of that is word-of-mouth marketing, which has really become organized as an industry only within the last two or three years.
Yeah, and you know, earlier in the show, we were reading about Seattle Times and the layoffs there, and certainly we've been reporting here in the Advertising Show the struggle that many traditional media outlets have been dealing with over recent years. I'm curious, with the interest in alternative media, how's traditional media dealing with the continued drift to alternative media as it becomes more in demand?
Well, one of the strengths of traditional media is that they have superior content over many of the pure play online or mobile providers. And so what they've attempted to do is to implement digital platforms that allow them to have their readers, listeners, viewers also access the content in more ways, because it goes to your original question of what are some of the reasons why we're seeing these changes, is that consumer media usage has also shifted. They're accessing data more out of the home. They're spending more time out of the home by being stuck in traffic. And if you've flown recently, and hopefully not on American Airlines today, stuck in airports for a longer period of time, et cetera. And so the traditional media companies have put their platforms together so that you can access their data, and they leverage their content. And interestingly, they just don't think of it as being online. There are a number of them that are also available in digital out-of-home venues such as taxi cabs and in elevators right now.
Yeah, and you had mentioned some of your studies. The one in particular, a release we received entitled Alternative Media Spending Growth Accelerates in 2007. Your CEO is quoted as saying that by 2010, your organization anticipates one out of every $4 spent in advertising and marketing will be earmarked for alternative media. Leo, as alternative media is still an evolving sector, this may seem a little aggressive to some. Do you think that marketers today are putting too much faith in alternative media?
Well, let's put this a little bit in perspective. So a lot of times you might see a press release from other companies such as TNS or Nielsen that talk about advertising growth only going up about 0.06% or possibly declining. And what happens, and it has been reported by a number of publications like Advertising Age, that they're only counting the traditional media companies. And even when they're looking at Internet, they're not even including search into that. So we are talking about not just advertising strategies, but marketing strategies like promotions, direct marketing, custom publications, and branded entertainment. So that's approximately a $500 billion industry. And by themselves, it's even larger than a number of other economic sectors. And what's happening is that the brand marketers are attempting to follow their users to the media that they use. And so as time spent on traditional print publications and watching particular television programs, especially broadcast versus cable, and they're seeing the shift to online and especially the youth audience to video games and others, they are shifting their dollars to those particular type of media because they want to be able to interact with them as much as possible, being media that the target audiences are engaged with, and consequently also in many instances offer a stronger return on investment or ROI metrics than traditional media has been able to offer in the past. And so many progressive companies such as Procter & Gamble have opened up their own word-of-mouth marketing firms. BMW within the last week just announced with their new BMW One series, which is aimed at a younger audience, announced that half of their spend will be online for the budget, and when we're talking about a $25 to $50 million campaign. To put half of that on online is an indication where a lot of the brand marketers are going in this particular instance.
Let me take interrupt you there for just a moment. We're going to take a break here. Dr. Leo Kiviarv is our special guest, Vice President, Director of Research at PQ Media. PQMedia.com is the website, and you're with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth here on the Advertising Show.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
See USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking.
Out of Stamford, Connecticut this weekend here on the Advertising Show is Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, along with Dr. Leo Kiviarv, who is Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media. PQ Media is the website. Dr. Kiviarv, thanks for joining us and welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, and stay with us if you're interested in branded entertainment, which we will jump into here a little bit later in the interview. But let's stay with alternative media for a moment. You mentioned last segment ROI. Describe, Leo, some of the improvements made in the area of return on investment metrics for alternative media advertisers.
Well, what's occurring is that the online market really changed what brand marketers were looking for when the internet started to give click-through and other types of measurements. And so all of a sudden, the traditional media companies were looking for other ways that they attempted to also show that return of investment. So we're seeing people meters put out by Nielsen. And then if we look at the alternative media spaces, something like word-of-mouth marketing, they used to just take a look at, well, was our name put in there positively? And now they're actually taking a look to say, well, was there recall? Did people actually do some buying of the products and other types of investments that can try to prove for the brand marketer that they made a good investment? And a good example of this is if you take a look at the chief marketing officer, which is a whole new position that's only been around for about 4 or 5 years, that they have an average length of about 18 months in their position because of pressure from upper management to prove some of these return on investment metrics.
Yeah, and well needed, I think, in today's digital world where people are really struggling, I think, in a lot of cases, trying to figure it all out. I had an article, and I can't put my hands on it, but it was an interesting article from Media Magazine that these three experts were saying, Leo, that their bets were on Facebook, and it was all about the new advertising program that they had just put in place. And looking back on it, obviously it was a huge failure and have suffered tremendously as a result of trying to disclose
what their
users use and privacy issues, et cetera. You know, how does an advertiser gauge, you know, which horse to ride? I mean, it's such an evolving sector. How do you make a guess as to really where the big hits are going to be and where you might end up saying, hey, I regret hooking my wagon to that horse, in the case of Facebook, for example?
Well, a lot of people don't consider Facebook a total failure. It's just that there was so much negative press that initially some of the advertisers had to pull back, but the idea was still a good one in terms of attempting to get more engagement with the target audience that doesn't mind the privacy issues as much as others. So if you were to actually interview 100 of the Facebook users, probably about 98 wouldn't have complained, but there were the two that had the privacy issues that are very important, and they needed to step back on it. So if you're saying, you know, should I do this or should I do that or should I use this medium, it's a case-by-case study. It could be in one instance somebody will use a company like Egg Fusion and put their ads on to eggs because they're trying to reach a particular age group of women who are buying the eggs, but somebody else who will be trying to reach the kids, they find out that Egg Fusion won't work for them, and they might have to go and try to use something else like Massive, which Microsoft acquired recently and put the ads into video games.
Mm-hmm. Well, you tell me, but I thought I read recently that Facebook's numbers are way off and that they don't have quite the participation that they were enjoying back in fourth quarter of 2007, and maybe that's a result of the bad press as opposed to their advertising program. You tell me.
They might be down a little bit, but, you know, social networks still are struggling to prove to brand marketers that this is a place to put the ads because of the possibility of the advertisement being by information that is not acceptable to all the target audience that they're trying to reach. And there are a number of other alternatives that a lot of the brand marketers are looking at because of the uncertainty. Was there a little bit of a cutback because of the negativity? It was because there were probably was an increase right before that in hoping that it would work. But, you know, your target audience of the youth market is still at Facebook, and brand marketers just will kind of put their wagons back into a circle and try to find a different way in trying to use the social networks.
Yeah. Real quickly, we have just a few minutes left here. PQ
Actually,
Media's
about 30
press
seconds,
release.
So.
I'm sorry?
Actually, about 30 seconds, so go right ahead.
Well, we'll just tease this. We'll talk about your branded entertainment market defies slowing economy discussion next segment, where we're going to talk about the three main segments of branded entertainment that you identify in your study.
I like it. It's a plan, right?
Oh,
Leo,
yeah.
It's good to have you here on the Advertising Show. Dr. Leo Kiviarvis, Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth this weekend here at the Advertising Show, being powered by Shipple.com and a really cool platform called Tendency. Check it out. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. We'll be back with more with the Good Doctor in just a minute.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Good morning. Are you not my daisies?
Right, Mother Nature. They're Chiffon's new daisy servers.
And right before the break, we told you what we were going to talk about, so let's get right to it. Right, Brad?
Yeah. Branded entertainment market defies slowing economy, a press release sent out recently. You discussed, Leo, three main segments of branded entertainment. Let's start with identifying each of those three segments that you discuss, and what's some of the trends that are affecting each one?
Sure. Definitely the largest segment of the branded entertainment industry is event marketing and sponsorship. Although sponsorship has been around for a while, such as the naming of stadiums, it's the event marketing part of the industry that is really seeing some interesting growth. And to differentiate the two, event marketing happens to be where the brand receives all of the notoriety. It's a Pepsi event. It's an event that MTV puts on, and versus a sponsorship where the brand marketer shares the notoriety with some type of artist or event, such as all putting in their ads on a NASCAR or Pepsi doing a concert with a particular artist like Prince or someone like that. So it's the event marketing where the brand marketer is spending all the dollars. And so as an example, we're seeing during spring break, which just ended, almost a 60% increase of spend on dedicated events because of the face-to-face interaction, which is very interactive with the brand marketer, with the consumer, which allows them to remember a particular brand. Another example might be Jeep at a car show puts out an obstacle course out in the parking lot so people remember what they did with Jeep. So that's the largest and the fastest growing part of the event marketing and sponsorship industry. The second part of it is... Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, please.
The second part of it is product placement. Majority of that being in television and in film, but we are seeing product placement in video games and in radio and in online, etc., in which there is either a placement within the program that doesn't get a lot of faceplate. It might be a background to someone, or it could be as important as a product integration where the character picks up the product, says that it's great, it makes them feel better, and then we cut to an ad for that particular product. And where the change has happened here, it used to be a barter model in which the brand marketer said, okay, we'll give you this Ford if you want to drive it around, and even when the show finishes shooting, you can still have this Ford to drive around. Now, because of Survivor and what Mark Burnett did and what happened with Trump and The Apprentice, where they were starting to say, pay us $1 million or $10 million and we'll definitely integrate it, we now have the paid model, and where there are a number of brand marketers that have opened California or New York offices so they can actually work with the producer. And the classic example was the recent program, Caveman, which Geico helped to produce. And then the third and final part of branded entertainment is, and definitely the smallest, is the Abergaming and webisodes aspect of it. Webisodes being short clips online that are very brand focused but have a plot to it, but it's all about driving a BMW during this short clip. And Abergaming are particular games that are produced by the brand marketers, such as some of the Burger King Xbox titles that were sold, or if you go online, it could be that Pepsi has a game that you can play, and it's their branded gaming online space.
You know, I know we're running out of time here. Just one final question about branded entertainment. How much more is branded entertainment expected to grow for the near term?
In the near term, it's going to be growing at mid to high double-digit growth rates, because these are particular types of industries that are averse to the ad-skipping technology, so they don't have to worry about that. It offers a lot of interaction, and it allows people to get their brands across in a unique way.
Well, as we wrap it up here, Ray, I guess all I can do is thank you, Leo, for the last-minute stand-in for our scheduled guest, Patrick Quinn, CEO of PQ Media. And as usual, with all great guests, Ray, it goes very quickly.
We've run out of time here, unfortunately. Leo, we hope you had a good time on the show today, and we do appreciate you being here at the Advertising Show.
Dan, thank you for having us and hearing the views of PQ Media.
Very good. PQMedia.com is the website, and we have more of the Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth coming up next.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Again, thanks to our very special guest today, Dr. Leo Kiviar, out of Stamford, Connecticut, Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media. We've got, a segment coming up here with Jean Bliss, the customer experience. She's going to tell us about the word tilt, T-I-L-T. Yeah, you're going to tell us about something else there.
Yeah, you know, first segment, we were both a bit distracted due to some technical issues we've been struggling with here at the show today. But I want to just make mention that our great partnership with a company called OpenAd, it's available through openad.net online. It's a great platform for advertisers, and it's truly going to change the way ideas are created and actually traded out there through a platform online. And we had a guest, the executive with that company, on several months ago, but I did want to make it clear that for the entire staff, and I know I speak on behalf of both Ray and myself in saying that we're both really excited about announcing in more detail a strategic partnership with a company called OpenAd.net. Visit their website. It's a great organization. We'll tell you more about that in shows to come.
Okay, good. And now you see you did that good. I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you.
Good.
I don't have these distractions going on and these lights blinking and all that craziness.
Exactly. Well, that all has to do with where you were last evening. Bar Advertising Network IMTV sees beginning of an end game in the wiring last week of Los Angeles and upcoming deployment of SMS capability. So what is SMS capability? Well, when former Coors executive Todd Martin and Omnicom's Integer Group founder Ted Case started the Denver-based network with 18 local bars back in 06, the test for InBev's Stella Artois had the execs texting local bars for sanity checks. Bars employing the network realizing double-digit sales growth over Denver market trends. We knew the network was working for us. Basically, it is IMTV. Since then, Martin has pitched the network of individually addressable satellite-controlled, this is a big title, individually addressable satellite-controlled plasma screens to brands that have been intrigued but reluctant to commit until the company could demonstrate national reach. Now, with the addition of Los Angeles and the wiring of Philadelphia this past month, the network will be in all of the top 10 markets. By summer's end, network will have added 11 million impressions, bringing the monthly total to 44 million. So there's something good out there if you're in a bar. Obviously,
yeah.
Something like
which
that.
Which you and I usually are.
And, well, yeah, not as frequently as we used to be, though. The the customer experience, Gene Bliss, that's coming up next here at the Advertising Show.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
CEOs are committed to customers, but don't often change how success is defined to jive with that commitment. Rewards are at such a high level, such as attaching bonuses to customer survey scores, that people don't know how to change their behavior. And the metrics aren't attached down to relevant operational changes. There are even times that satisfaction scores are ignored if a high sales performer doesn't make the grade on customer satisfaction, but hits it out of the park bringing in new business. Tilt. The company takes a cue from where people are rewarded and what the company really cares about. Companies who do this right spend the time to lay out what the new metrics are down to the operational level, and they establish meaningful forums and methods to hold people accountable. The customer stuff is not wedged into an overcrowded meeting agenda and potentially pushed off completely when time falls short.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Always a pleasure. Gene Bliss here in the Advertising Show, The Customer Experience. And now you know all about the word tilt. We've got, We've got David Benjamori, author of Accidental Branding, coming up next week here at the Advertising Show. Hope you'll, did you get a chance to check out that book yet?
I have, and it's a great book. And as you and I both know, we get a lot of books here at the Advertising Show and pitched a lot of authors, and they make it to the point where they're on the show. That means their book's worthwhile. It's a great
sure.
read, and we'll look forward to doing that next week.
Excellent. What do you have there?
Well, you know, Ray, radio as an industry, you've been in it for many years, and I was in it for a few myself. It's suffering. There's no secret about that, with revenues down or
sure.
flat around the country. But yet that's no reflection as to how consumers feel about radio. And just a release survey by the American Media Services, they report that 61% of adults in the U.S. listen to radio daily, and fully 73% state that they still turn on the radio when they hop into their cars. Nearly three-fourths say they listen to about as much radio as they did 5 years ago, and it would appear that radio will continue to be as popular because of internet radio and high-def radio, and both of which have been seeing some real growth. You know, I think radio, and I don't know how you feel about this, but radio as an industry, I'm not sure, has done a really good job of clearly promoting themselves and educating the advertiser as to the value of what radio delivers.
Well, that and morphing into what they need to be as we look forward to the future. It's kind of like what newspaper went through. There are growing pains now and transitional pains, and that is one of the biggest challenges, because they're looking back at what used to work and saying, how come this isn't working anymore? So something to think about there. Hope you enjoyed the show. Tell a friend about theadvertisingshow.com. It's right here. And the Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.